Hello and welcome to the latest Safer West Mercia podcast. My name is John Campion. I'm the West Mercia Police and Crime Commissioner, and I shall let my guests introduce themselves.
So good afternoon, I'm Detective Chief Inspector Lee Holehouse from West Mercia Police, and I work in the Vulnerability and Safeguarding team based here at Worcester.
Excellent. And Lee, you're here talking about rape and serious sexual offences, and you're part of the work that's been developed within West Mercia Police, we're going to talk about in the podcast. How did you end up sitting here, as it were? What bits in your career led you to this part of policing?
Well, I've been in the police now, well, it'll be 22 years this coming Monday, and I've got a very vast and varied career around investigations. And most of my career path has led me to the investigation or the oversight of rape and sexual assault offences. So I've got a very keen interest in these types of investigations and a passion to catch the offenders. So in the past couple of years, I've been working within major crime, leading major investigations such as murder and serious stranger rape investigations. And probably about 10 months ago, an opportunity came up to take over this role. And as part of my portfolio, one of my sort of the key objectives I was given was to help West Mercia Police overhaul how we respond to rape and sexual assault investigations and alter the culture so we're getting better outcomes quicker.
So as people are aware, this is going to be a discussion around rape and serious sexual offences. And if people either have concerns or indeed personal experience or indeed need further help around the matter, there is a lot that is available. So we will pop some links underneath this podcast of where people can get help or more information. There's information on West Mercia Police's website and on West Mercia Police and Crime Commissioner's website. So all by putting those names into your search engine, can you get some more information? We really know of the volume of sexual and sexual offences that are in our society are at a really high level compared to some historic rapes, as the contention is that more is reported now. But it still shows that there's lots of misunderstanding about the process of bringing those who are responsible for such offences to justice. For example, lots of misunderstandings out there, including only 39% and identified that most rapists are known by their victim, for example. And indeed, 42% recognising that being in a relationship or a marriage does not mean consent. So therefore, making sure that we're supporting society and those who have been subject to these behaviours, knowing that actually this is wrong and it's absolutely right that the state can intervene in more of these cases, because that misconception is that barrier sometimes to the underreporting that I referred to a minute ago. And I'm just going to touch on some of the stats before we go into the main discussion. In West Mercia, that local picture, West Mercia sees just under the 1 in 10 rape offences action taken, which is above the most similar forces average, isn't it? And we have seen then a big step up to 12% for other sexual offences, and again above our most similar forces. But I think we recognise, and I think society would recognise, that level's got to go up, and some of the work we're going to talk about today is absolutely linking to that. So you started off by telling us that you're involved in work explicitly in West Mercia, but one of those is around a real investment that we've made into the sergeant roles in terms of that gatekeeper in relation to this particular criminal justice route. So can you just explain as to why something described as a gatekeeper is a good thing in terms of getting more people the justice that they deserve?
So slightly more to that. What I'll do is I'll probably start off with conventionally how we've done stuff, so to put a bit of context around why we've changed it. So historically, you've had a victim who will have reported a rape or a serious sex offence. We'd have had a uniformed cop go out of it. We'd have taken the initial details. That then gets allocated to what we class as a traditional detective sergeant who runs an investigation team, who then allocates that to an officer. And that's how we've always run those level of offences. The issue being is, in modern policing, there's so many demands across a frontline detective sergeant, they can't possibly keep their eyes on everything. And very often what gets missed are those mature investigations and the continued drive and the momentum that's needed to maintain focus and gather that evidence. And that was a gap in our rape and sexual assault investigations. So looking to close that, we've actually recruited 7 DSs now. You're referring to the gatekeepers, I'll come on to them in a minute. Before I start with what the 5 RASO DSs do. So there are 5, and that's 1 per policing area. So 1 for Shropshire, 1 for Telford, 1 for North Worcestershire, 1 for South Worcestershire, and 1 for Hereford. So everyone's got their own DS that owns RASO, in effect, from a local point of view.
So just so the people listening at home, because we use lots of acronyms in policing. So what would RASO...
So if I refer to RASO, that would be what we class as rape and serious sexual assaults.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so that's what they do. So there are some real key roles and key fundamentals that we've asked them to do. So every RASO offence and rape and serious sexual assault offence that comes in within 24 hours gets one of those DSs to review it. Okay, and they're looking for a number of key things. So first of all, we're looking to ensure that we've referred every victim to support services. And then secondly, what we've got them to do is look to see whether there's a real strong and proportionate investigation plan on that crime. And that is key, because to get the outcomes, the best way of doing that is get that investigation plan on early so we can identify those inquiries, focus down, get the right work done so we can get that offender into court. Once that's done, they then provide what we would class as subject matter expert support to the investigator and the sergeant. So they're on hand for help and advice and tactical advice to enhance that investigation. And then after 3 months, what they do is they then take ownership for the supervision of the investigation. So it takes that pressure off that frontline DS, who's really busy with lots of other demands, but it means we can maintain a focus on the investigation and a drive momentum. And the rape and serious sexual assault DSs then hold the investigating officers to account to make sure that those inquiries are driven and they're done in a timely way. So that's their role. So the gatekeepers, as you referred to before, we've now got 2 of them. One in the north of the organisation looking after Telford and Shropshire, one in the south looking after Hereford and Worcestershire. And their role is predominantly around file quality and working very, very closely with the CPS to make sure that we submit timely, accurate, evidential files to the Crown Prosecution Service to help them get to decisions earlier to support charges. And that means that when we get into the courtroom, there's less action plans, less work coming out of it. So it means we can get a trial quicker. So whilst those posts are relatively new, we've only really been embedded in since just before Christmas, we're already hearing anecdotal evidence from the LPAs that they're working, their local policing areas that they're working, and we're already hearing from the Crown Prosecution Service that those forces that have got gatekeepers embedded are starting to see outcomes quicker. So it's a real positive step in the right direction.
Because there's something called Opsiteria, which has been a big national focus in this part of policing. How does that work nationally, that best practice element and the things that we're talking about here now connect?
So Operation Soteria, that's come as a result of a government-led end-to-end review of the rape investigation from the point it's reported to the police up until the point it ends or gets to court or whatever that may be. And I don't think it's any secret that we needed to get better at it. We needed to change. We needed to provide a better service to the victims. And Operation Soteria is that. And Operation Soteria it involves key policing and Crown Prosecution Service leads coming together with academics to identify a better culture and a better process. So in effect, what they want us to focus on is the 3 areas. So producing an investigation which is victim-centred, suspect-focused and context-led. Now, I'll try and give a very, very generic brief example of how that works so people could understand it. So you imagine, and you referenced before, that actually most rapists are known to their victim. So in a domestic setting, you've got a couple. One is a domestic abuser, one is a victim. Regular violence, regular rapes. And after a period of time, the victim comes forward and reports them. Now, historically, what's been asked? Why is it taking you till now to report a crime? Why didn't you just get up and leave? Why did you allow him to rape you? And all those kind of things. And then the investigation gets framed in that mindset. And then the courtroom gets framed in that mindset. So we want to change that now to say, well, of course they wouldn't leave them because of the psychological abuse that they're under. You know, they may be having to remain in the premises because have financial security because they've got dependents, because they've got children. And they, in inverted commas, submit to consenting to the sexual act because that's easier than getting beaten up. So already you can see the two differences there in what I've described. And actually the second one is more of a focus on the suspect's behaviour. And if we work as the police to present that to the court and take the culture away where this has been historically an examination of the victim's credibility and put all the onus on the suspect's behaviour and the context around that behaviour, that is like to change attitudes and see an uptake in convictions at court. So there's some key stuff that we've got to do around that. So we've got to drive those standards of investigations where that culture is set. To do that, we need to train the office as well and the investigator as well. So we've embarked on some procedural justice training across the organisation, which looks at how we need to better interpret victims' behaviours and victim responses to crime. Because very often victims can feel as if we don't believe them. And I can honestly say for my 20-odd years in the police, I don't generally think that's true. But what I do think is we're not very good at conveying our communications well. So we very often do leave victims with the impression that we don't believe them. So this training will try and address some of that. We're working with partners such as the CPS to build really good training products to improve the standard of investigation I offer to do, so we get it right first time again, get those cases into court earlier. We're working at building up our data set so we can better isolate the issues and those who are at most risk of harm using high harm data so we can get interventions in early and we can focus on disrupting suspect activity. Because let's be honest, we're not always going to be able to take every case to court, but what we can do is focus down and disrupt and prevent crime from continuing. And probably the best thing for me is look at how we've changed things digitally. So in the past, when we've had a report of a rape or a serious sexual assault, we've taken the victim's phone off them for examination because that's just what we do. That's the culture we were in. And not recognising that actually by doing that, we were probably taking somebody's lifeline away from them and the support networks that they had. So now we've gone completely in the opposite direction. We don't do that anymore. We don't take a victim's phone off them unless there's an investigation need to look at it. And even then, we only do it with the express consent of the victim at a time that's convenient to them. And when doing that, our promise to them is to have that phone returned within a 24-hour period and or we provide them with a replacement so they've got something and they can maintain their life away from the investigation. So that doesn't just involve me and my team. There's a whole raft of support teams and services and your own PCC officer involved in the work along that. So we've come a long way and we're doing I think we're in a good position, but we've got a long time to, we've got to get to September where we can fully implement it, but I think we're in a good place.
Because the Opsiteria work that I know a bit about nationally, but those listening might not, has been the bit that you early on just talked about, that shift away from the emphasis on the victim, but not in terms of a support centre, in understanding their behaviour rather than understanding the behaviour of the perpetrator. Because quite rightly, you know, the language you use as an example in what you've just said at the beginning around the victim blaming language needs to be consigned to the history books, yes, doesn't it? And about making sure that shifting and hearing the whole raft of work that is within Soteria to make that happen in terms of the shift in the way the system works, not just about the individual playing a part.
And it's actually really simple to do if I could just come in there. Can you imagine if somebody reports a burglary, somebody reports a theft, somebody reports a shoplift or assault or whatever it may be, we don't take their phone off them.
No.
We don't delve into their history to start looking at their credibility as a person. So why do we do that here? So it's actually quite a simple mind set culture to move away from.
And for me, in 2024, your phone is often your connection to your loved ones and your support networks, isn't it? So I don't even know my own number. So, to be able to connect with, let alone other people's numbers, so to connect with others without that phone, that central, contact.
Well, everybody's life through their phone these days, and that's the thing. And it's for people of a certain generation, we still like to text. But lots of people these days, they converse through social media, through other apps and stuff like that. And to take that away from somebody is like losing an arm these days to people. So it's vitally important that people have that independence and support network around.
So just very briefly, just for those that will be listening, just very briefly run us through the process of when that victim survivor makes that initial call to police, and how they're supported and anything that they might be aware of on that initial contact.
Excuse me. So that would probably depend on the circumstances of the report. So let's just say if a victim came forward and the rape or sexual assault had happened in a very short space of time beforehand, we may deploy what's called a specially trained officer, which usually is a uniformed officer who's been provided with extra training to obtain that evidential account from the victim and to assess whether there's any need or requirement to recover forensic evidence from them. And then there's very much a conversation with the victim then around, well, what is it you want from the police and your expectations, and what do you want us to do for you? And I suppose that comes back to the victim-centred, putting them at the heart of it, giving them that voice. What is it they want from us? And then we work with them to deliver that work. So it may be that there's an ongoing forensic medical examination to gather that evidence. So, and that could be quite a traumatic thing for people to think that they're going to go through, but it's conducted by trained medical experts who are very professional, who are very, very sensitive, and it's done in the most sensitive way that they could possibly be done. And what will happen then, the investigation, if that's what a victim wants from us, then gets allocated to a local investigation team to be progressed from there. And that is where all the stuff I talked about previously comes in. So it'll be allocated to a detective, it'll be allocated to an investigator to manage that investigation with oversight from their local detective sergeant and the rape and sexual assault detective sergeant as well, reviewing that process to make sure that we do it. And where we want to get to is have a really good relationship with our victims, whereby in effect they're equal partners in the investigation, so they are being kept up to date regularly, they are being supported, we are listening to their concerns, we are listening to lines of inquiry that we offer, so we can build that best investigation for them.
In terms of the Razzos, they're fairly new, as we've alluded to, talking about how we improve things, where would you see their main bit in terms of the victim is going to feel a better service or an improved service?
Well, I certainly think positive outcomes. So I think putting
more people being held to account.
More people being held to account, more people being put before the court. And you mentioned before around our positive outcome rate for rape at the minute is roughly around about 9%. And obviously we want that to be better. But to put that into context, less than 12 months ago, that was just under 6%. So the process is starting to work. So I think we need to carry on with that. I think for me, I think we need to drive down the amount of times it's taking us to investigate crime. And certainly within less than 12 months, which I know can sound quite lengthy to people. But believe it or not, there are those investigations that go beyond that period of time, not solely because of issues with the quality that the police are providing, but maybe because we're doing forensic work or we're reviewing technology evidence, or we're waiting for the Crown Prosecution Service to make a decision. But it's about the DSEs working to reduce that. And I suppose if we're doing those things, if we are providing the standard of investigation that a victim's expecting, we're getting the very vast majority of our suspects into a courtroom, we're disrupting the rest so that we're reducing crime, I would like to think that would improve victim confidence and satisfaction, and that would be the kind of service they'd want to see from us.
You've just touched on other partners in the criminal justice system, because the police, quite rightly, don't have control over it all. There's the independent judiciary who ultimately make the decisions, a court service that organise the court. You've got the CPS who provide the prosecutory advice and indeed lay charges and indeed ultimately would prosecute a case. How do you work with those partners and how, in terms of driving some of the improvements that you've been talking about from an internal West Mercia point of view, but actually, as you alluded, the satisfaction rates with victims also has to involve that wider system?
We'd like to touch on that, because actually in terms of driving improvements isn't just down to the police, that there are wider partners that have to come to the table of that, and they are doing so. We focus on the Crown Prosecution Service, who are probably our biggest key partner in getting these outcomes. One of the things I was keen to do was improve our relationships with partners. So we had better conversation, better dialogue, and do it in person. And that might, like we were doing many, many years ago, until times change. But we've become too reliant on emails, we've become too reliant on processes and databases to provide that communication. So I'm working hard with my regional counterparts in the CPS to deliver that. They want to deliver it, and now we're at a stage where I'm hearing anecdotally actually officers and lawyers are picking up the phone to each other, or they're using the Microsoft 365, Microsoft Teams, just to bounce ideas and build those investigations. So that's the first thing we're doing, is building that, because that's just going to reduce the amount of time it takes us to do things. Secondly, what we've embedded is a process called early investigation advice. Now, what that is after around about 6 weeks of an investigation being live, we go to the Crown Prosecution Service and say, so far, this is our case. Okay. In your professional opinion, do you think this will ever make a court ring? And if so, what lines of inquiry do you think we could pursue? These are what we think we could do. What do you think? There's no point us going away and doing stuff that ultimately the Crown Prosecution, no, I want you to go and do this instead. So we have that conversation with them. And what we want to get is into a regular conversation where we say, yes, we do think there's a realistic prospect of conviction here. If you focus on these five or six things and come back to us, we will charge this case for you. So it gives us real momentum. It gives us real focus. It takes away bureaucracy of things that we don't need to do. And it allows us to focus our efforts and work on the things that we do, which is ultimately going to drive up the detection rate and reduce the amount of time our victims are waiting. So from there, we have regularly monthly meetings to discuss performance. And one of the key things that come out of recent performance, we're contributing regionally to an above average conviction rate at court, above national average, that is, by some distance as well. So what it's showing is that the quality of the work we're getting into the courtroom in West Mercia overwhelmingly is providing positive outcomes and good convictions.
Because that basis of that good quality investigation enables the right charges to be laid, to enable maybe earlier guilty pleas and all those kind of things.
Yes.
Really fascinating to hear, not an area of the police's work where it is job done, I don't think. And you're on a journey, as you describe, especially around some of the ops interior things. What's next? What's the next area of focus in terms of the journey, especially in this incredibly sensitive, incredibly impactful part of criminal work that you're involved in?
So I mentioned before that we have to have OPSA team in our national operating model embedded within West Mercia Police by September. So I'm working with my team to build our transformational plan to allow us to do that. And that puts us in a really good position. There's a couple of key things I'd want to focus on beyond that, which are going to make a difference to the public, I think. So first and foremost, it's how we better identify those people that are causing the most harm. So we're currently working within our teams at the minute to how we identify them and what processes we can put in place to better disrupt them. We do that in general terms anyway, but I think we need to be smarter in terms of how we do that. So we're identifying those people who may never been convicted of a sex offence, but who our database is telling us could commit one or are in and around those circles. What can we do to prevent that crime? So I'm currently working on it at the minute. But the key thing we're trying to work through at the minute is building up a survey, which we will approach victims of our sort of rape and sexual assault offences at the end of the investigation, where we ask them to provide us with feedback on how it's gone, because I think that's vitally important, because we're not claiming to have all the answers here. Mm. And very often there may be things that a victim will think of, and we'd say, do you know what, that's actually quite straightforward, but we haven't thought about it. So to improve it, we need that advice, we need that support, because we know we want to get better, we know we need to get better. So we're working with our independent sexual violence advocates and Access Counselling and West Mercia Rape and Sexual Assault Centre and the PCC's office to see what that looks like and how we build that and how we approach our victims, because we've got to be mindful that's got to be done in a really sensitive way. So those are probably the biggest areas of focus coming out of this next phase.
But absolutely, that voice of the victim and survivor right at the heart of what we're doing, and so difficult to do, as you articulately describe, because we don't want to re-traumatise people. Yeah. We want to make sure their views are taken into account, but it's how that's done ethically really, really difficult to deliver. But great to see the focus. And also really fascinating to hear the work of you and your teams. In our society, we don't talk about sexual violence. It's almost a bit of a to-do hush subject. And for me, recognizing a society, recognizing what is happening quite often behind closed doors in the privacy of something that's seen as a relationship, but is still happening, really important to make sure that we can keep the light on it to reduce the incidence of it. And the bit that you got to at the end in terms of preemptively identifying those that might be at risk of committing such offences, really, really powerful, because that's how we truly have a great victim-focused strategy, isn't it? By stopping the victimisation in the first place. Lee, really great to hear some of the work that you and your team have been are involved in, and where it's going next.